With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Grant and Danny, good morning. Welcome in. 106.7 The Fan on this Wednesday. October is 28 days old. We're 3 days away from passing out candy and eating candy all over the area. What's going on, DR? How are you?
I'm very well, my friend. I woke up early this morning, and I stood in line, and I got my little sticker that says I voted. Now, what I'm hoping is that nobody yells at me anymore, but that's probably too naive. But I did. So everybody yelling at me worked. Otherwise, I would have just stayed home and hit myself in the shin with a hammer. But the process was as seamless as it can be, and I treated myself to carbohydrates afterwards. I've already had a very full morning the day after the Los Angeles Dodgers ended the championship-starved Los Angeles region. It's been almost 2 months, or I guess 1 month, since they celebrated their last title. So congrats to the Dodgers, man. That was one for the ages.
So you did pull off your voting process. Your boy has tried to vote no fewer than, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. And by tried to vote, I mean I drive over to where I'm allowed to do my early voting here in my area at a little golf course. And the line is like 2 hours long. I mean, it's crazy.
Really?
I think it's because, I'm in a fairly, I guess, popular area or busy area in Fairfax. And there's only a handful of, like, early voting locations. They don't have them set up in every district or anything. So I'm going to keep kind of just driving by to see if there's a line. But so far I'm batting 0-0-0 on my attempts to see something that would allow me to get out of the car and have enough time to invest without being away from my wife and kid for like 90 minutes to 2 hours to do this. But so, what I'm hoping is ultimately either before Election Day or on Election Day, when you can now vote all over the place and, you know, your specific little district at your high school or whatever, that there will be no line. I've never had a line before. I've moved. But when I was living in Kingstown, I don't think I ever stood for 1 second. Every single election day, walked right in, walked right up, gave my ID. They handed me a little piece of paper and a folder, and I walked over and bubbled in the Scantron. And I put the Scantron in the machine and left. So this has been very, very odd. But it's both crazy and cool that so many people are voting early. So good for you. Glad you got your sticker.
What was supposed to happen, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but what was supposed to happen, and we're very diligent about this because it's hard. We got two kids at home, making arrangements for them to be A-okay. We don't want to bring them inside some building with us or have them wait in the line with us if it's going to be 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is, right? So we were very excited about this. D.C. specifically was like, we're going to mail you a thing that says, hey, you're here, right? This is who you are. This is what your name is. This is your address. We're identifying you. Return it and tell us that we're right. And once you've done that, we're going to send you your ballot, and you can do a drop-off on your way to coffee, on your way to the office, afternoon. You could do whatever you want with the damn thing. Easy, easy, easy. So we did that the first day you could, and we have waited and waited and waited and waited, and we just never received anything. We never got that mail ballot thing that was supposed to happen for the easy just drop and go. So we're like, well, okay, I guess we got to go do it in person now. So we made all these arrangements, and we got it done, and, you know, it ended up being more of a gong show than we wanted it to be. But, again, I think the theme of this 2020 situation, and we can get into this with the Dodgers and Justin Turner, nothing is going to be easy. At no time is it ever going to go according to plan, right? Major League Baseball deserves a ton of credit for getting through a season. And then last night, you know, all of a sudden, we're like, why is Justin Turner out of the game? Oh, that's why. And then there he is celebrating with everybody. I mean, the whole thing is just so weird. What a weird game.
Yeah, so the scene last night for people that weren't paying attention. So first, the game. The Dodgers beat the Rays 3-1. They win the World Series in 6 games. They hadn't won a World Series since 1988, the year I was born. So their 32-year drought ends. So congratulations to the Dodgers. They've been one of the best teams in baseball over the last decade. They've been the best team in the sport unequivocally since 2012, averaging over 90 wins per game. Kind of Washington Nationals rich, if you will. Washington Nationals plus, and that's heavy. They are great every regular season. They get to the NLCS or the World Series more often than they don't over the last 5 or 6 years, and they haven't won. So they finally punched through. Even though I was rooting for the Rays, I was really, really happy for them. And the core group of guys that have been there for a while, your Clayton Kershaw, Kenley Jansen, Justin Turner, Chris Taylor types, right? Those guys all get their ring. And Dave Roberts, who gets knocked around like he's, you know, some lightweight in a heavyweight division all the time. So I was happy for them, and congrats to the Dodgers. They win the World Series. But as is the case, not only for them generally, they win their World Series in 2020, and people will now try to put an asterisk by it. They can't really fully celebrate because they're getting screamed at and yelled at because in the eighth inning of that game, Justin Turner, who's their starting third baseman and one of the longer-membered players in the franchise, gets yanked out of the game. And as you said right away, we're not really sure what's going on. And then it becomes apparent pretty quickly thereafter that he failed a test for the coronavirus. Now, baseball had gone over 2 months without a single test. They had actually gone to a bubble for the majority of the last month for the playoffs and not had any tests in the bubble. So it's kind of weird to figure out, well, how did the coronavirus infiltrate this bubble when basketball and hockey went, you know, 3 months without a single test, coming back positive. But he got taken out of the game in the eighth inning. The hope, fingers crossed, is that it's a false positive. His test was inconclusive, and they found that out during the second inning they find out his test is inconclusive, so they call the lab and they say, hey, we need to know what's going on with this other test from today, so let's check today's test rapid, more so than waiting till tomorrow. They check it. It comes back that he has the coronavirus, so they have to – there's a string of calls now. Baseball calls the owner calls team president. Team president calls Dave Roberts in the dugout. Roberts tells Justin Turner you're out of the game. And so all those things happen, and he's out of the game in the eighth inning. They win the World Series, and now he's not on the field celebrating with his team for the first 30 minutes after the game. And so that's a bummer. That's sad. I feel bad for the guy. He comes back out, masked up, to celebrate with his team. So now the debate is, should he have? And we can have that conversation. I think there's reasonable points to be made on both sides, but I was very surprised, frankly, when he's tested positive for the coronavirus that he would go out and celebrate with his team. You know, stayed in a mask for the most part. They had a team picture, and everyone got very, very angry because he was sitting in the team picture, kind of staring straight ahead, and took off his mask for the photo when he had tested positive for the coronavirus. So people wanted him thrown in jail for that. So the whole thing was just uncomfortable, you know, awkward, potentially unsafe. You've got families and players out there. I guess worst case scenario for baseball, Danny, 14 Dodgers and a bunch of their family members test positive today, and then all the people that seemed very excited when there was a positive case last night can scream about how baseball shouldn't have had their season. Worst case scenario for baseball is that. Best case would be it's a false positive. All the screaming was for naught last night, and you know they pulled off a 2.5 month stretch or whatever without any tests, but the whole thing was kind of a disaster for baseball as they're culminating what was a very successful year. They went months where these people that wanted baseball shut down had no positive tests to get upset about, which is incredible, and I don't know how it happened, and it should have been impossible. And yet, in their culminating moment on the biggest stage last night, somebody tests positive, and here we were again debating kind of the merits of everything.
So the story of the game is just a funny dichotomy is all. It's different situations, obviously. But the guy with a positive test lasted longer in the game than Blake Snell, who was throwing a shutout. it's just crazy. I know what the numbers say. I know what the spreadsheet says. And that live by the spreadsheet, die by the spreadsheet, right? I mean, that's how the Rays are built. That's how they got here. So everybody that's just tuning into the Rays for the first time is going to say, what are you doing? How could you take that guy out? They've got a calculator. They've got three guys from MIT and one guy from a different school where they majored in letters and numbers and crazy math problems. This is what they do. And that got them to the World Series. That got them one of the best records in the sport. They've been really good over the last several years. But this is where it bites you. Sometimes a guy is just in a zone. He's not a robot. He's not an animatronic. He's not a video game character with tendencies and ratings like a Madden guy. Blake Snell was unbelievable last night, and he left after 73 pitches, throwing a two-hit shutout where he struck out 9 and was in complete command. It's one of those things that it's easy to question.
Right.
But I see all the angles. I see it. This is who the Rays are, and that was a human decision, and they left it up to the computers.
Yeah, they did, and they got to the World Series based on the computers, and the only reason they can contend is based on the computers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is being made now, like the humans won and the analytics lost when Andrew Friedman, who's Mr. Analytics, runs the Dodgers.
I know, for
which
both.
I find
he
hysterical.
Built both teams.
No, the analytics won last night, actually, too, by the way. They were both teams are among the most analytical in baseball.
You know those Astros that always end up in the finals?
That's right.
That's a pretty analytical group.
That having been said, yes, that was a terrible decision. And, you know, analytically, they say, the point is if you go with your fresh bullpen over a starting pitcher a third time through the order, then more often than not, you're going to give up fewer runs. But I don't know anybody that would have just blindly done what Kevin Cash did last night with his starter dealing the way that he was. It just seemed like a terrible decision. But
when
that
you make
was
a move,
you know,
the other team celebrates, it's probably not the right one.
Yeah, exactly. If guys are fist pumping when you pull your dude out of the game, don't pull your dude out of the game. We saw it with Greinke last year, as you're saying, and we saw it last night. But the bigger story was Turner. And again, now we kind of wait to see what's what. And you hope that no one else got the virus and that being outside and all of those things, being in masks, helped them. But theoretically, I mean, he could have already passed it on if he had it when he was on the field yesterday to a bunch of players in L.A., a bunch of players with the Rays. The other thing that I can't stop thinking about is, what if the Dodgers had lost last night and we had a Game 7 of the World Series scheduled for tonight where you now have to get all the tests back from the Rays, you have to get all the tests back from the Dodgers. I think they would have almost certainly had to halt the World Series for at least a day while they sorted all of this out. And the other thing that is baffling and confounding to me is, you know, how in this bubble did someone get the coronavirus? I was told by a player that I was texting with last night that the families are not allowed to come in and out of the bubble. So whatever the bubble is, it's not a real bubble, obviously, but, you know, they're in a hotel, they're in a ballpark, they stay in these confined areas. But, like, are they allowed to go to a restaurant? I was told no. Is a wife, is a dad, is a grandpa, are they allowed to go to the mall? I was told no. But are they all doing that all the time and following all those rules? I have no idea. But you would think that if you were going to have a positive test during the World Series, it would have been while traveling city to city, staying in your normal city.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a bubble that for 1 month was uninfiltrated. So what changed? What happened? All of the staffers, all the clubbies, everyone involved with these players is tested all the time, and they don't interact with the fans at all, who, yes, are now at the game in a very small capacity, but there is no close proximity to the point where a fan would give you COVID. So I have so many questions about that, but it was unfortunate because I think the story could have and probably should have been, oh my gosh, how great was this for baseball after their start to the season? And it turned out to be, why is he on the field? How did this guy get it? And there are fair questions. I'm not knocking the question. But the timing was tough for the sport.
Agreed.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Next, let's get into the NFL and the Washington football team. Washington is going into a bye week. It means Danny and I and you guys get to flip around and watch other games, which is my favorite Sunday of the season every single year. But they're trying to upgrade their safety position, and they went and made a call for Eric Reed, and he told them no thanks, which was interesting. We'll get into that next on The Fan. G&D 106.7 The Fan. So we've been talking over the last couple of days about the safety issue that the Washington football team has. Landon Collins out for the year. Troy Apke having already been benched, has played one snap the last 2 years. They internally supposedly didn't want to have to ask Cam Curl, if they could avoid it, to play a different position because they really like the role they've carved out for him. They've elevated DeShazer Everett off the bench, who's played decently at free safety, but they may have to have him change positions to help Cam Curl and do some things where they get creative with young players. They've elevated Jeremy Reeves off the practice squad. So we talked about whether or not Washington should go after Eric Reed. Reed, for those of you keeping score at home, is a former one-time Pro Bowler many years ago, but a good football player still, who made 130 tackles last year. He played the last 2 seasons in Carolina with Ron Rivera. He had a hard time getting a job 2 years ago, and Rivera ended his quest to get back into the league. He was one of the original allies, Danny, for Colin Kaepernick. So when Cap was taking a knee and taking his stand, Eric Reed was the second most vocal, visible member of that movement. And because of that, a lot of people feel like him being out of the league, and more specifically the issues he's had kind of finding homes over the last few years, have a lot to do with that and not much to do with football. Washington and Ron Rivera have been linked to him for a while. In fact, Rivera was asked in the offseason, why not call Eric Reed to start next to Landon Collins? And he said, well, we have Landon Collins. We're paying him a lot of money. They play the same position. If we didn't have Landon Collins, you'd bet that I would call him. So as soon as Landon Collins was out for the year, I thought, well, let's see if Rivera actually calls him. Turns out, he did. They called him yesterday. They told Eric Reed that they wanted to sign him. He would have been signed to their practice squad. A Reed, who's 28 years old, said that he did not want to play for Washington if he had to initially be on the practice squad, and decided he would continue to wait for another call from somebody else. Now, there were a couple of quotes from the Associated Press from Eric Reed, who reached him yesterday. He said, I just don't think playing on the practice squad is reflective or indicative of my career. He went on to say, I'm just not in a place to play on the practice squad right now. If they go in a different direction, I'll be ready. He also said that quarantine's been good for him. He's blessed, and he's enjoying his time with his family. But they did call him. They did try to sign him, and Eric Reed told them no. So as of right now, that means, I guess, Cameron Curl and DeShazer Everett are your starting safeties.
Yeah, it seems that way, right? And you elevate Jeremy Reeves, who's shown well in preseasons past. Remember when we used to have preseason football.
What's that? What's that about?
Yeah, it's before the actual season. Guys get together and play a semblance of a football game, and it's where guys that may or may not make rosters make plays and become heroes here in Washington. Shout out Marcus White. But this is I see every angle of this, and this isn't like, you know, your normal strong sports radio take, but for Washington's perspective, you go, hey, the quirky rules that we got this year say that we can throw you on the practice squad. A guy that's been in the league, you know, what is it, 7 years? Not typically a practice squad player, but here's what we have. And, Eric, there's a pretty easy path to you getting on the football field. We got to go through this whole, like, you know, multiple rounds of tests and all these different protocols. By the time you are talking to Jack Del Rio and you've had the chance to Zoom call and study, do a bunch of things, you'll be ready to be the starting strong safety for the final 8 games of the season, probably. We got a bye week. This is the perfect time to do it. Come on board. And Eric Reed's going, well, I've been a starter and pretty damn productive player for a while. I don't want to go through an internship, and I don't want to walk into a situation where you guys are playing kids instead of me. I'll hold out for something better. That's his right. That's his risk, because I don't know how much the phone's ringing at this point. But it's interesting. And people wanted to make it, you know, whatever their agenda was about him being blackballed, or that Washington's a bad organization or whatever. I don't think any of those things have anything to do with it, to be honest with you. I think this was an Eric Reed going, no, if you want me to be on your active roster and play after the bye week, happy to do that. I don't want to go through and run the risk of just being stuck on your practice squad to be a practice body. And Washington's going, we'd like you to be a practice body. At minimum, at maximum, you'll end up being our starting strong safety pretty soon. I get it. It's a risk for Reed not to take the gig, though.
Yeah, it just depends to me on how desperate you are to get back in the league. I mean, you're 8 weeks into this season now, and nobody's called you but Washington, which he confirmed to the Associated Press. This is the first call he's got. So I guess you're rolling the dice in hopes that you get a call in a week or two and someone else loses a safety, and maybe it's a contender, and maybe that comes in week 9 or week 10, who knows. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to Kansas City or to Pittsburgh or something like that and immediately not have to deal with the practice squad at all. The interesting thing, though, everyone's jumping on this practice squad part of this. But 2020, and we just had this convo about COVID and everything with baseball, 2020 is so different in terms of player transactions. This is what's happening with veterans now, okay, by and large. Guys like Dez Bryant, who have been out of football, an example. There are countless others where you initially join the team and it takes a little while to actually get you into the flow. So, like, if Washington had a game this week, Eric Reed wouldn't be able to play for them anyway because of the COVID protocols. It takes almost 2 weeks. So it's good that they have a bye. That's part of the reason why I thought it made sense to go get him. But you are on the practice squad, which is expanded with different new rules that allows for more players and veteran players like him to be on it as a get-a-guy-into-shape situation. You haven't been playing football. We now have the opportunity with this expanded situation to put you on the practice squad, get you into shape for a couple of weeks. Now, here's where I guess I could be wrong. I have a hard time believing that Eric Reed, who is good at football, would not start over Cameron Curl or Troy Apke or DeShazer Everett or anyone else on this team within a couple of weeks. When you start practicing and you are clearly better than these players for a team, whether we can joke about it or not, that is in the hunt for a division title right now, where a coach has already benched a developmental player of note for a guy that doesn't mean a whole lot to him in the long term because he's saying that he's got a chance to win the division. I have a hard time believing that Eric Reed, who's better than all those other guys, wouldn't be on the field. So it was very odd to me that he turned them down. Now, I understand, again, why he turned them down. I think he's waiting for a situation where he immediately goes to the active roster and maybe for a situation where he plays for a team that is better than Washington. But if I'll just speak for myself. If I am out of the industry and I want to get back into it, I'm not waiting for an afternoon drive job if I've been out of work for a while and the story is that no one is interested in me because of things that have nothing to do with how good I am on the air. When someone calls me and says, hey, at this station where, by the way, the comp here for safety is that this is the worst safety position in the NFL arguably right now, sans Landon Collins, don't you think? This is one of them?
It's up there. Yeah, it's in that conversation, certainly.
So you can come. I can't guarantee you a spot on the air. Now, we have terrible ratings in every time slot, and we're not married to anybody in any time slot. But initially, we need you to come do some stuff on the weekend and a couple of updates.
Do nights, yeah.
I would say, okay, cool. But he has decided not to, so he'll wait. That's his prerogative. I don't think anybody should crush him for that. I found it really interesting. I mean, he has been waiting for a call for a while. He got one from a team that has zero proven starting safeties. And, oh, by the way, a coach that you played for 2 years who has twice over been the guy to call you when you needed a job, and he said no. So I was very surprised.
I think I was less surprised than you. I'm with you. I would disagree with it. And it's his business. You should do what he wants. If you're just asking for my opinion is you should have taken it. That's my opinion. Now, he's, of course, allowed to do whatever he wants. He can refuse any employment. He can accept any employment. He is well within his rights as a citizen of the United States and an NFL football player until he decides that he wants to walk away from the game. But this idea that the thing I disagree with, I guess, in practice, and I see a bunch of people who are responding to this via Twitter. I met Funny Danny Grant at Grant H. Paulson, is the indignity of asking to be a practice squad player. Okay. Where's there more indignity? Receiving zero phone calls or asking to be a practice squad player with these quirky rules with just a jog into the starting lineup? Just go for a brisk jog. You'll end up starting, you know, 8 games at strong safety for a team, as you said, isn't any good, but your career is extended.
Well,
or
don't
you could
you
not
think,
get any phone calls.
I mean, a big issue I have is that people are not properly grasping that the practice squad right now is not the practice squad a year ago.
Right.
Or the practice
it's not
squad
the
a year ago.
Insult that people are making it to be. It's not. It's
right.
Not what it is. It just is.
The COVID season with the different rules, with the protocols of bringing guys in and out of your building, the practice squad is being used differently. Dez Bryant caught 88 passes for 1,300 yards, 93 passes for 1,200 yards, 92 passes for 1,300 yards. He is on a practice squad right now. Now, I don't think he'll be there for long, as we talked about yesterday. And again, there are other veterans who have signed practice squad deals, but should he get should Washington have called him and said, hey, we got a bye week, let's put you right on the active roster? Probably. I mean, I would have done that if it was a sticking point. If Eric Reed said, I'm not coming as a practice squad player, I guess my point is, I just don't think he would have been on the practice squad at all when they came back and played next week. I think he would have been elevated and been on the field on Sunday against the Giants on November 8th. I could be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a conversation with him. Maybe they made it clear to him, look, you're not going to play every game. You're going to be on the practice squad. And if that's the case, fine. I have a hard time believing that with how mediocre or bad their safety position is on paper, and how good at football Eric Reed is, who's 28 years old and probably has some game left. What do you guys think about this? We can open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines. Yesterday we talked about the idea of calling Eric Reed. They did. He said no. And what's your reaction? 800-636-1067 on Grant and Dan. Washington needs a safety. Eric Reed might be the most talented safety available. They called Reed. He said no. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan, the AAA Always On Call listener lines are open at 800-636-1067 if you'd like to give us a shout right now. 800-636-1067. So the two questions I've got here, Danny, and we can chew on these and answer these here, is number one, are you glad that they called Eric Reed? And number two, what do you make of his decision not to join the team, and what do you think played into that? We'll get to the second one next, but you know me, I wanted to call Reed. I think he can play. Him only being 28, I think he could be an asset, not just this year, but, well, I don't think they'd pay him any real money next year because it's clear that Rivera thinks he and Collins are somewhat similar and maybe that they wouldn't coexist that well in a backfield. I mean, Landon Collins tore his Achilles. That's not always an injury. That's just a seamless recovery, and you know that he'll be back at the start of next season. So I would bring him in and kick the tires. I'm not sure that you've got guys on the roster at the safety position that were drafted to and or acquired to be starting safeties for you. I don't think you're taking reps away from someone who's the answer. I'm intrigued by Cam Curl, but I just want to keep him in a role that he's doing really, really well right now. So I'm pro calling Reed. What did you think of the decision to even try to go get him?
Yeah, I was okay with it. I would prefer actually what happened. I think this is good. I want to see Cameron Curl with a larger role and Jeremy Reeves, and I want to see if they can do it. If they can't, I'd like to know that, and then I can go shopping accordingly. I'm assuming, by the way, that Eric Reed is still good. I'm not watching intimately Carolina's defense last year. He put up some good numbers. So did Thomas Davis last year for the Chargers, and he doesn't play anymore here in Washington. He's good in the clubhouse, et cetera. So I'm assuming Eric Reed is still good. I kind of wonder why, you know, he's not on somebody's roster if he was that good, and then it leads to, you know, some speculation and otherwise. But, yeah, I have no problem kicking the tires, bringing him in. Like, it had to be on their terms, though. And their terms were, come in for a practice squad spot. We're going to make sure you can still do it. And if you can't, no harm, no foul. We don't have to make a roster move accordingly because we've got open spots in our practice squad. We don't have to cut a guy just to give you a chance, which is the way it kind of would normally go in most NFL years. So he didn't want to do it on their terms. So I think everybody's okay. Everybody's right in this kind of situation.
Yeah, I don't make any bones about the fact that I think part of why Eric Reed is not in the league is, you know, him being linked to Kaepernick and his involvement in that movement. I think you'd be naive to not think that, right? But we're also at a point now where the league has shifted pretty substantially on how it views what happened back then. And you've got coaches who have said or done things, whether it's taking a knee or in the anthem or other things, with their teammates. You've got owners that have come out in support of their players. So I think it'd be way more easy for him to get a job right now than even a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, because I think that the pendulum has swung more in favor of what Kaepernick and what Eric Reed were trying to accomplish, which initially was met with blowback and anger, and I think there is more understanding now. That having been said, neither guy's in the league. Now, Kaepernick not being in the league, to me, makes sense in terms of football stuff. Eric Reed not being in the league is confounding. I don't really get that. But we now know that a team has called him. And you know, who knows how many teams called him this offseason. He said nobody's called him during the season other than Washington. I don't know if teams tried to offer him a job to come into camp to compete. And he said that he didn't want to do that. I mean, it seems to me like he is sitting there at 28 going, look, I'm a really good player. I played in a Pro Bowl before. I'm not coming in to be on your practice squad. Somebody said, well, why would he want practice squad money? As soon as he gets elevated to the active roster, he gets paid money, real money, football player salary money. Cam Sims, as an example. Every time he gets elevated from the practice squad to a game, he gets a game check, you know, whatever the minimum level of his years in the league is or what have you. So Eric Reed would make 53 man on the roster cash over the course of this season, as soon as he gets signed to the active roster. I mean, I guess my one big question, and we're not going to be able to get this answer probably, Danny, unless Reed spills the beans, is when he's talking with the team, did they in some way give him some indication that they were not going to elevate him and have him start playing in games within a game or two? Because if their plan was, well, let's bring in Eric Reed and just have him on our practice squad for an extended period of time, then he shouldn't have signed. Why would they have done that? What logical sense does it make for them, desperate for safety help, to call this guy to replace Jeremy Reeves on their practice squad? I don't think that's what they were doing when they called Eric Reed. Sorry, I just don't.
So the question that I have, it just generally, and I was thinking of this while you were talking, you're right. The view of what Kaepernick, Reed, and company were doing for years, you're right, it has softened. Reed wasn't blackballed. He was steadily employed the entire time, which kind of, to me, speaks to football ability and acumen, which is the part that nobody wants to talk about with the Kaepernick angle. So is he now being retroactively blackballed, even as we've softened? That's the part that I kind of have a problem with, is the idea that he was working throughout any protesting, any kneeling, any whatever, because he could play and people don't really care. Some vociferous fans do, one way or the other, and that's your right to do that. But NFL teams care if you can play or not, I think, for the most part. He could play. Is it now that we've softened on our viewpoint, then now he's retroactively being punished for it? That's the part I don't quite grasp.
I don't know. I know this. Again, I think you signing him was more difficult for an extended period of time. I don't know if we're still in that time or not, but I know that we talk about celebrities and distractions and things like that. I just think it's common sense to me, and I could be wrong, but this is my opinion, that a lot of teams decided against signing him based on the fact that with Eric Reed came a lot of those questions and coverage and things that they didn't want. I don't think that's necessarily fair to Eric Reed, but that's where we are. He decided to do something. Those are the ramifications. I do think it's a lot easier to sign him right now. If Washington signed Eric Reed, how much blowback would there be? I mean, maybe I'm completely off base here.
But maybe I'm crazy.
I think you'd get a couple of loud people who say, I'm not watching games anymore, you know, or whatever. But I think that's almost gone at this point.
Negligible, I would think.
Also, he's not Colin Kaepernick, you know, which is, you can make the case, would still be ridiculous. But at least as a quarterback who you see on camera all the time, just a different thing. He's been in the league the last 2 years playing every single game. So I don't understand where the fear is that if you were to bring him in, that somehow it would hurt your organization's like image or something. I think that's largely gone away. But more important, you know, him turning them down, is it because he thinks another call's coming? Would he rather not play all season or play for Washington after a week or two on the practice squad? I'd love to have an answer to that. If he'd say, I'd rather not play all season than lower myself to have to sign a practice squad deal and then earn my way onto the field, all right, that's fine, but then we have to have a different conversation about why you're not in the league.
I think so. Everybody wants to make it one thing, and I'm not saying you. I think everyone wants to make it one whatever angle, and it's not. This is complicated. I think that's my big takeaway from this.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. The Dallas Cowboys seem to be blowing up their locker room right now and trying to get rid of a bunch of players after their loss to Washington. Looks like a sign that they are not only selling, but they are potentially announcing we're out of the race. You know, they're pooling their funding, and they're going to different states, man. They are saying we are not going to be competing for the NFC East with some of the moves that they've made. Check out some of this news next on Grant and Dan. It's been 4 days since Washington beat Dallas's butts, slapped them around, big brother, little brothered them in front of everybody at FedEx Field, 25-3. Just an embarrassing day to be a Cowboys fan, which is a pretty good day generally to be a Washington football fan. Since that loss, when Dallas fell behind Washington in the division, same record, but now the good guys have a tiebreaker with a Thanksgiving game upcoming. Presumably they'll have Andy Dalton back. I don't want to say the Cowboys are now in full-on sell mode and tank mode, but they are clearly not in the business right now of keeping their top talent. They traded Everson Griffin yesterday to the Detroit Lions, so they're getting rid of one of their best pass rushers who had a sack in a game against Washington against Kyle Allen. Today, and I just heard Earl say this, and I dug it up on NFL.com, they have informed Dontari Poe and Daryl Worley that they will be released if they can't trade them, which is pretty incredible. You know, it's one thing, Danny, when a team decides, well, we're going to sell because we got to get draft picks. We're building for the future. I don't really care what we get back for Everson Griffin, who's pretty good. If it's only a sixth rounder and that might turn into a special teams linebacker, fine. Let's just add as much assets as possible to create some future competition, which is what they did with that that trade, right? Now they're saying we're going to try to trade Poe and Worley too, and if we can't trade them, we're going to cut them to get them out of our locker room and just to move on and play more young players and essentially be worse as a team. They are hitting the on to 2021 button, aren't they?
Yeah. This is the Mike Rizzo post-trade deadline, Brandon Kintzler, Sean Kelly, you know, a bag of used minor league baseballs. type trade. A couple things. Second straight year, a team loses to Washington and is so upset about it that dramatic things happen. Last year, the Washington head coach, Ron Rivera, fired after Carolina lost to Washington. So unacceptable for that organization. They said, that's enough. We've seen enough. We're not doing this anymore. Goodbye. You're the weakest link. Same thing now with Dallas. The way that they got embarrassed by the lowly Washington football team basically said, that's it. I don't care. I don't care what the division is. We're done. You guys are done. And it's kind of funny. It's kind of sad. But I love the implosion in Dallas. And I honestly think it's a pretty good plan. They're so leveraged with these huge contracts. And there's this, you know, the sort of Damocles is hanging over their heads with this Dak Prescott deal. I mean, again, you're assuming, I do anyway, he'll come back and rehab and be healthy and be good to go. And there's just $40 million bucks just hanging out right there on your salary cap. Maybe they can, you know, maneuver it so that it's slightly less, but it's going to be a huge impact. Then it's Cooper. Then it's Elliott. Then it's some of these other big paydays that they've got. And they got to fill roster spots. You need a giant influx of young, controllable talent. The way to get that is to hold lottery tickets in the draft.
Yeah, get as many picks as possible, even if they're mid to late round picks. I mean, you could trade a couple sixes maybe, you know, and, mm-hmm. and go get a late five or something. Like, teams will do wacky things on the second and third day of the draft. So I get what they're doing. I think it's smart. And by the way, it's the correct evaluation. They're terrible.
They're garbage, man.
That is a horrible team. That would be a fun show to do for 4 hours, is just talk about how bad the Cowboys are right now. But with Andy Dalton, they're bad. Without Andy Dalton, that team probably doesn't win. Like, if they played the Jets this weekend, who are you picking? And I'm serious about that.
I'd pick Dallas, but
With DiNucci at quarterback, you would?
Yeah, even still, but it'd be close.
I'd pick the Jets.
I wouldn't be confident.
I would pick the Jets this weekend if Dallas was playing them. No doubt in my mind. Now, does that mean that the, you know, Jets definitively win? Absolutely not. But you're talking about Sam Darnold and a crew of mostly professional football players who happen to be terrible and coached poorly against a Dallas team that they are on their third quarterback. As we always say, the plane has crashed into the mountain at that point. Like, when you get to quarterback three, someone should look that up. What is a team's record when they're playing their third quarterback that they've played that season? The winning percentage has to be in the 200s. It's got to be. It's just they're done. And they know that in Dallas, mm-hmm. and that's why they traded Griffin, and that's why they're doing this.
They should trade Amari Cooper, by the way, with the emergence of CeeDee Lamb, as good as he is, or Gallup or somebody. I would trade Cooper because of the contract. But
100% agree.
You don't think a contending team would go, yeah, I'll take a guy to be a 1A? Like, I don't know, Green Bay? You think Green Bay could use Amari Cooper opposite Devontae Adams?
I think it would be hard to trade Cooper because of his contract. I shouldn't say that. They could trade Amari Cooper. I think it's harder to trade him than it would be a Gallup or somebody like that. And you'd probably, honestly, weirdly, get more back for Gallup because of the contract situation. Whereas
absolutely
a team
would,
views bringing on Amari Cooper and going, well, we're bailing you out money-wise. We're not going to also give you top picks. Yeah, I would deal Cooper and have Gallup and CeeDee Lamb. But if they wanted to deal Gallup and keep Cooper, that's fine too. But you're right. They should absolutely be doing that. Not you know, rearranging deck chairs on this ship as it goes under with these random defensive tackles, but the big money guys. One thing that's fascinating to me, too, is the NFL trade deadline almost never is like other sports, you know, frenzied, active. There's not a lot that goes on. I think that could change this year for this reason. Generally, in the NFL, the salary cap goes up exponentially every single offseason. So you go from, let's say, $50 million to $60 million to $70 million to $82 million to $89 million to $93 million to $100 million, and it's just constantly growing. And so all the free agent contracts you sign and the players you brought in, not that big of a deal. Because of the pandemic, though, most people in the league are expecting that the cap will not only not grow this year, but that it's going to be potentially several million dollars less next year. That's going to go down considerably. Well, teams spend all this money, Danny, and do all the things that they do, planning on a cap growing every year. Nobody projected in 2020 the coronavirus is going to come to the United States, right, and we're not going to be able to have growth in the league. So point being, there are teams that are going to be in really, really bad cap situations based on, more than anything else, kind of bad luck in COVID, that need to get rid of some salaries and shed some money. And that's why I think there might be more trades of some decent players than we've seen in a long, long time on the deadline coming up on Tuesday.
And there are teams with plenty of cap space. I don't want to say necessarily a rainy day fund, but I mean, look at the Browns, Jets, Cowboys, even Washington. Now, the Cowboys' cap space is about to evaporate going in the next year, again, with this Dak Prescott deal. So they cleared the deck. But there are a bunch of teams that have cap space that are pretty competitive, like the Colts or the Steelers have some room. I'm just saying. I mean, maybe not for Cooper, but you see my point. There are moves that can be made to help teams go in this quirky year.
I do love that hypothetical. We'll ask Sam Monson of PFF this question next. Who would win a game on Sunday between the Jets and the Cowboys? What does that say about Dallas? That's interesting. G&D on the bench.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.